Hello, and thank you for listening to episode 209 of Got Creeps, your favorite podcast that always makes sure to give you your weekly dose of the weird, mysterious, and creepy. We're your hosts. I'm John.
And I'm Leilani.
And if you want your stories featured on Got Creeps, make sure to send it over to yougotcreeps@gmail.com or to any of our socials at Got Creeps or our personals. Mine is at John_Raymundo.
Mine is Leilani May Raymundo.
But enough of that. Tonight we are going to dive into the mysterious case of Flight 19, one of the most notable and first cases of the Bermuda Triangle. Also, quick side note before we get into the story. Did you like that? That was cool, huh? That was a cool cool new intro we had. Anyways, let's get into the story. On a cold December day in 1945, a squadron of torpedo bombers known as Flight 19 prepared for a routine training exercise at the Naval Air Station of Fort Lauderdale. Led by the experienced Captain Taylor, the pilots eagerly awaited the day's mission, unaware of the chilling tale that would unfold. With the sun high in the sky, casting golden rays over the airfield, Flight 19 taxied onto the runway, engines roaring to life. The day was clear with no signs of bad weather on the horizon. It was a perfect day for flying, or so they thought. At 2:10 p.m., five torpedo bombers, led by Captain Taylor, took to the skies, embarking on their triangular route through the Bahamas. Their mission was simple: practice bombing runs and return safely to base within a few hours. But little did they know, fate had other plans in store. As the hours passed, unease settled over the pilots. Some reported feeling sick and disoriented, their senses thrown off kilter by an unseen force. Meanwhile, back at Fort Lauderdale, a distress call crackled over the radio, sending shivers down the spine of those who listened. Amidst the confusion, Captain Taylor's voice cut through the static, his words dripping with desperation. Both compasses malfunctioned, leaving them lost and adrift in a sea of uncertainty. With each passing moment, their chances of survival grew slimmer, like grains of sand slipping through an hourglass. As they struggled to regain their bearings, a sudden storm engulfed the plains, casting them into darkness. Lightning danced across the sky, illuminating the terror etched on the faces of the pilots. It was as if the elements were conspiring against them, trapping them in a nightmare from where there was no escape. With fuel running dangerously low and hope dwindling, Captain Taylor made a fateful decision. They would stick together until the end, facing whatever lay ahead as one, and with those haunting words, Flight 19 vanished into the abyss, leaving behind only echoes of their final moments. In the days that followed, search parties scoured the ocean in a desperate bid to find any trace of the lost planes. Ships were diverted from their missions to aid in the search, their crews braving the treacherous waters of the Bermuda Triangle. Yet despite their efforts, no signs of Flight 19 were ever found. As the weeks turned into months, and the months turned into years, the disappearance of Flight 19 remained a chilling mystery, shrouded in speculation and legend. The Bermuda Triangle has claimed its first victims, leaving behind a legacy of fear and fascination that continues to captivate the imaginations of all who dare to ponder its secrets. And so, the tale of Flight 19 serves as a haunting reminder of the dangers that lurk within the depths of the Bermuda Triangle, a place where reality and myth intertwine, and where the line between the known and the unknown blurs into obscurity. As we reflect on their fate, let us never forget the brave souls who ventured into the unknown, never to return. So, this was kind of, like, the first, like, well-known case of, like, the Bermuda Triangle, right? So, what I want to do real quick is, like, go through kind of, like, a timeline of what happened. Because, like, their flight plan was, like, very punctual and stuff. Like, they knew exactly what time they were supposed to be, like, at what location and stuff like that. And so, like, we have, like, a pretty well-known and well-documented, like,
flight path and, like, you know, everything like that. So their exercise began at 2:10 p.m., right? They set off, take flight, no issue. And like I mentioned, their flight path would be like a triangle through the Bahamas. They would like practice dropping bombs and they would return, right? That was just their exercise, their training exercise.
Are they dropping actual bombs?
No. This is just for pretend.
I don't know. I don't know. They might be dropping actual bombs.
They might be, but why would they on their own territories?
For fun.
So, the exercise should have only taken about 2 to 3 hours, right? So they gassed up the planes, you know, as normal. 3:40 p.m., a few of the pilots started to report feeling sick, and they felt disoriented and dizzy and kind of just didn't feel all there.
How many are there?
Five.
Five planes in total.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And five pilots. Like, they're bomber planes. They're not, like, Boeings. They're not, like, commercial airplanes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They're just the five pilots. And at the same time, there was a captain that was back on base at Fort Lauderdale who had picked up on their transmissions towards each other, and he had overheard one of them radio in and like ask for their position and stuff, and a lot of them were like, I don't actually know where I'm at, like I can't tell you where I'm at, and like their answers were like kind of all over the place and didn't make any sense. And around this time is kind of when he would overhear Captain Taylor, Commander Taylor, pretty much say, like, a famous quote that's been kind of tied to the Bermuda Triangle. Mm-hmm. He said, both my compasses are out, and I'm trying to find Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'm over land, but it's broken, and I'm sure I'm in the Keys, but I don't know how far down, and I don't know how to get back to Fort Lauderdale.
He's over land, but it's broke. Like, the land is broken, or the compasses are broken?
I don't know. I don't know what that means, because, like, we'll talk about it a little bit later. But I don't really know what that means. So kind of take that as you will. The commander back at Fort Lauderdale contacted a rescue party, and they were sent to kind of like the estimated position of where they were based on their flight path of the routine of the exercise that they were going on, right?
Don't they have GPS?
No. This was back in 1945.
They don't have any, like, tracking beacons.
They have, like, compasses and shit, but they don't have, like, tracking, they don't have GPS, they don't really have that kind of technology and shit.
Oh.
Yeah, kind of sucks. Kind of sucks. But what could you do? At the same time that the rescue party is being sent out, the commander back at Fort Lauderdale was giving them kind of directions on how to find their way back. But Taylor kept saying that he couldn't find the sun. So he was, the commander was telling him, like, put the sun on your port side wing and just keep going, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was like, I can't find the sun. Like, I don't know where the sun is. I can't find it. But also, keep in mind, it's a clear day. There's no clouds. There's no nothing. It's a clear day. You should completely be able to see the sun.
Yeah.
And at this point too, like they continued on. They had asked Taylor to switch radio stations because they were having a hard time hearing them.
Switch to 103.5.
what was I saying? Switched radio stations to because they couldn't hear him. They kept losing contact. It was like staticky and choppy. It was like going through a tunnel. There's no tunnels in the sky.
I don't know. I've never flown a plane.
I've been in a plane.
Yeah, but you don't see out in front of you.
That's true, I guess. But you kind of see a tunnel on the sides also.
Who knows?
That's true. I've never seen an air tunnel. Taylor would just straight up refuse. Didn't really give an explanation. We kind of just be like, no, I don't want to do that. No, we're not going to switch. So that was a little weird. By 4:30, the weather completely changed, and there was a huge, like, unexpected storm that hit the entire area.
That tracks for Florida.
Right. And then at 5:15, Taylor said that they were heading west because they believed that that would get them back to Florida.
Is it just Taylor as the pilot in this plane? Like, there's nobody else?
Taylor is leading the rest of them. There's five separate planes.
Okay.
And Taylor is like the captain leading the other planes.
Okay.
But they can all communicate with each other.
But it's like a one-man show in the plane.
Yeah, each pilot has their own plane.
Right. I just didn't know if there was like a co-pilot, there was anybody else. No,
it's like Maverick style. It's like Top Gun.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody gets their own plane. That's what I mean. Like, they're bomber planes.
Well, I don't know if there's a co-pilot on a bomber plane. I don't know. What if the other person needs to take over? Who knows?
You can't. You're in the sky. When they had said that they were gonna, you know, head west. Till they hit California, or California, head west until they hit Florida, the team and everybody back at Fort Lauderdale and everybody kind of like aware of the situation knew that the planes didn't have enough fuel to get them back to Fort Lauderdale, to get them back to land, basically. 5:50, Taylor would send his last message over the radio. He says, we'll continue to fly 270 degrees west until we hit landfall or run out of gas. And after this, all communications to Flight 19 were unable to reach them. Strangely enough, though, communications amongst the five members of Flight 19 were able to be heard by the people back on base.
Okay, so they couldn't get to them. But they could still hear that they were communicating with each other.
Mm-hmm.
They just weren't able to reach them.
Right.
Okay.
They can hear them. They couldn't reach them.
So they knew that they were still alive at this point.
Right.
And still they were still trying to find Fort Lauderdale.
Yes.
And the sun.
And then following that, at 6:20 p.m., Taylor says the other four pilots will have to ditch unless landfall. When the last plane drops below 10 gallons of gas, we all go down together. And that was the last anyone ever heard of Flight 19. That was the last communication between any of the five pilots. That was the last communication that anybody received. That was it. So search parties were sent out, obviously, to try to find these five planes and five pilots. And, you know, there was ships that were pulled from other training exercises. And one of the ships that was pulled from another mission was requested to relay their position at around 7:30. Now, granted, the last time that we heard from Taylor was at 6:20. So this was about an hour after. And the pilot in this plane completely disappeared as well. No response.
Oh, he didn't last that long.
Yeah, didn't last that long. And so the search for Flight 19 and the extra missing ship continued for 5 days. Nothing could be found. Strangely, the U.S. Navy and, you know, the government and everything places all of the blame on Taylor and says that he was the one who doomed them to a watery grave, right? And, like, they have their justifications saying that, you know, the he was the most experienced, so he should have been able to, like, guide them out.
Find the sun.
You know, right? Stuff like that. So, like, they do have their reasonings and stuff behind that. Saying that, but there's also a lot of things that kind of just don't add up.
And that also doesn't explain the sixth missing ship.
Right, exactly. So,
what, they're like, crash, not landed, because they're in the water,
mm-hmm.
and they see the sixth ship, and then Taylor's like, hey, this way, this way.
Come here, directly into the water. And the sixth ship is like, fuck you, Taylor, okay.
And then they all just never have, they're never seen again.
Yeah, yeah. All Taylor's fault. Fuck this guy. No, and like, it's crazy because he is the most experienced. He's had like hundreds of hours, if not thousands of hours, piloting planes.
Mm-hmm.
He is a, well, it was well documented that he is, you know, a very well seasoned, well experienced pilot. So the fact that he couldn't find the sun was insane. Like, it was like something's not right just because of that alone. And it's funny that you had asked before about, you know, the land looking broken, right? Because some of the other communications between the five members of the original Flight 19 were strange as well. They were saying things like the ocean didn't look right, or, you know, things look similar and kind of like almost correct, but not. And just kind of things like that. So very Stranger Things upside downy to me.
So have there been before this? What year was this?
1945.
Okay, so before 1945, had there been other, not training exercises in that area, but have there been other flights through what we now know as the Bermuda Triangle?
I'm sure there were. I don't know when the one lady who got eaten by coconut crabs. I think she flew through the Bermuda Triangle. I don't know, really.
So this is just the first notable.
It was the first, like, well-known, well-documented
right.
one. It's not the first.
Okay. Well, yeah, that would make sense because this is 1945.
Right.
Like, there are many a years before this.
Right.
Okay. I don't know where I don't know what I wanted from that. I just wanted to ask that question.
Okay, I thought you were going somewhere.
Nope.
I was gonna let you go because that was, like, really the end.
Can you sail a ship through it?
Never been. I mean, like, we've all heard stories of the Bermuda Triangle.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, you can't go there at all. It's like a portal to another dimension. You'll get sucked through. So, like, I'm sure, like, ships and stuff, there's been reports of, like, ships going missing and going down. There has to be.
Right. Yeah.
I just didn't look any up for this episode.
No, yeah. But it's just like, at what point, because it geographically on a map, like, there is a mapped out point for the Bermuda Triangle, but, like, at what point did Taylor and the other pilots pass through that realm, so to speak, and everything just went haywire?
We don't really know, because we don't know what route they had taken exactly, because again, we didn't have GPS. We couldn't have tracked their location exactly and their route exactly.
But I mean, they had to have had a map that they followed.
Right.
When they were doing the training exercise, like on a map, they planned out like this is the route, like you have to go this way mm-hmm. and this way and then come back.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to have known like at this point in time, because they said like it was supposed to take 3 hours, mm-hmm. right? Starting at one point, what, around like noon? So starting at noon or whatever, you're going to, and they don't have GPS, but they also know how to map out time and distance.
Mm-hmm.
So like at this point in time, you should be here, point A.
Right.
Or, well, point A would be where they started. So you would be at point B to point C. You'd be at point C at this time mm-hmm. on your way back to point A at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a route that they were supposed to have taken.
Yep.
So how do they not know where they went?
That's the point.
Yeah, but it's like
that's the whole, you got it. You got it.
But is nobody watching them either?
How?
I don't know. With binoculars?
I think you're severely underestimating just how far people can actually see. Or overestimating just how far people can actually see.
They invented the telescope by this point.
Honey. Do you know how the Earth works?
Somewhat.
The Earth is a circle, right? So if you go around the circle at a certain point, we can't see past that circle.
Okay.
You can't see over the hill.
Okay.
So you can't just see them with binoculars and telescopes.
I'm just saying.
Is this a bit? Are you joking or are you serious?
I'm just saying, if you are...
I'm getting upset.
If you are conducting an a training exercise, yes, you have the ones that are doing the exercise, but shouldn't there be a supervisor?
Who's the one leading the mission?
Yeah, but yes, there's a commander back at base, but shouldn't there be someone, I don't know, maybe in the water, not in that direct location, but like, okay, cool, everything's going as planned.
How fast do you think boats can go?
Well, they're not following the planes. They're in a far off location to just make sure they're going the route.
That's why they have radios. That's where they're keeping in communication with base.
I don't know. I'm just saying, if they listened to my idea, they wouldn't have gone missing.
What idea?
To have somebody watch them the entire time.
I'm upset.
You're only upset because they went missing because they didn't listen to me.
Is this a joke?
No. I genuinely think people need to be micromanaged and watched to make sure their job is done correctly.
No, I agree. But what I'm saying is you can't. You can't just watch them.
I think that you can.
You can't just watch them.
Look at where Fort Lauderdale is.
I'm so upset right now. You can't understand this.
Open in maps. Let's say it's here, right? Put a boat right there.
Honey. They had to go this way. They were going here.
Okay, then look. Put a boat right there. have a person right there.
So anyways, they're here. I think that the Bermuda Triangle could be like a portal to like some sort of upside down type of world. I really need to change the subject because I'm getting upset. I think that the Bermuda Triangle is super weird. And there's a lot of other things that happen in the Bermuda Triangle, like eels go there, and we don't know what happens to the eels, but they come back out, and there's more eels.
Eels can't mate. There's no way for them to mate.
Right. But again, they go into the Bermuda Triangle, and then they come back out, and there's more eels.
They just duplicate in there.
Right. But how? What kind of magic is happening in there? Or what
put
if
somebody there?
What if the eels? I'm gonna walk off. I'm gonna walk off.
What about these eels?
Just fucking put some fucking binoculars in there. Just fucking use a telescope, huh?
There are lighthouses that guide ships in the night, and you can see things from there.
I'm sweating. I'm so upset.
I'm just saying, if you would have just put a watch guard, they wouldn't have gone missing.
Okay. Anyways, weird stuff happens in the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, like nobody's watching people.
Eels. That should have been my, I don't do the creep pick, but, Stranger Things, again, very upside down-ish.
Yeah.
I like that idea. I like that idea of, like, there's, like, a reverse.
It's just a mirror image.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's cool. Like, you know that movie, As Above, So Below?
Yeah.
It's a good one, too.
Yeah.
Oh. I also thought that the whole part where, like, and I don't know what it is about, like, that kind of stuff that always, like, gives me the heebie-jeebies, but, like, the fact that, like, they couldn't speak to them, but they could hear everything that was going on, like, amongst themselves.
Knowing that they're there, just like Ghost, honestly, but knowing that they're there and you can't talk to them, but you know that they're communicating with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And like they know full and well that you're back where you are, but they can't talk to you either.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very,
well, since everybody back at base, they could hear their conversations. Were they trying to communicate back to base? Or did they just give up on that all completely?
I believe after, like, a certain point they did. I think that, like, at a certain point, they both realized that, like, they couldn't talk to each other anymore.
They're just, all the pilots are like, fuck base. So, what are you guys having for dinner?
Something, I hope.
Those eels look good. Which one of you guys have a binocular?
I'm gonna fucking shoot myself.
I'm buying binoculars for the show.
Just a lot of weird things. A lot of just, like, strange events that happen within, like, such a short amount of time. That, like, the entire situation was just odd. And then for them to just disappear without a trace, they couldn't find, like, any pieces of ships, any bodies, any, you know, parachutes, anything.
Yeah. Any indication or evidence that they were ever there.
Right. It's even from the other ship also, you know? Like,
just nothing. Saying, that pilot sucks. That pilot, it only took him an hour to go missing.
An hour and 10 minutes. An hour and 10 minutes. Well, an hour and 10 minutes from when they went missing. So, like, who knows how long he had actually, like, been out to, like,
right,
see, to search.
Well, because when did they send? Because they didn't send. Yeah, they didn't send search parties until after Taylor's last communication.
Yeah. Maybe like 10 minutes. No,
so literally at 7:30, he was that pilot was sent out.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Yeah. Crazy, crazy, crazy time. I think the Bermuda Triangle is a crazy, crazy thing that we don't talk about anymore, but I feel like it was a huge thing when I was a kid. Like quicksand.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
You know, like, we always heard stories of the Bermuda Triangle.
Like, it was an easily accessible thing that somebody was going to go to.
Well, I mean, like, it's right off the coast of Florida. So yeah. It's not, like, far.
That is why Florida's so fucking weird.
The people come from the from the Bermuda Triangle.
It has been explained. Florida has been explained.
New conspiracy theory.
Benjamin Franklin's probably there. He's not from there. He's not from Florida, but he's from the Bermuda Triangle.
He created the Bermuda Triangle.
Just like he fucking stole time from people. I'm... This man really grinds my gears.
Quick little break in the action. You're probably seeing stuff here. Saying, hey, what you got there? What are these? What are those? For those of you listening to the audio version, I'm holding up a cup with our Got Creeps logo. I'm pointing at my iPad with the Got Creeps logo. What are we doing here? What are these things? What are they for? We have Got Creep merch. Where can you get all this stuff? Head over to JMac Crafts. I'm pointing here. Head over to JMac Crafts. JMac Crafts. I don't know. It'll be somewhere on the screen. Or in the show notes below. It'll be somewhere. You'll be able to see it. Head over to JMac Crafts if you want some Got Creeps merch. You can get shirts. You can get stuff. Send her over a message.
You got some things.
We got options. We got options.
You want things, we got things.
So make sure to order all of your Got Creeps merch while you still can. Without further ado, let's get back to the show.
But, yeah, I think that is it for Flight 19. What else do we got?
We got a creep pick.
I like that. Creep pick.
So, do I have a twisted treat for you guys? Our creep pick of the week is none other than The Autopsy of Jane Doe. Like, this movie really stressed me out. So... for those of you who haven't experienced this gem, allow me to set the scene. While investigating a brutal family murder, Sheriff Sheldon stumbles upon the body of a mysterious woman buried in the basement. But here's the kicker, she doesn't seem to belong to the crime scene at all. Cue the arrival of the father-son coroner duo, Tommy and Austin Tilden. They are tasked with performing an autopsy on this enigmatic Jane Doe. And let me tell you, what they uncover during this eerie procedure will have you sleeping with one eye open, or not at all. As the night unfolds, secrets begin to unravel, revealing a tapestry of darkness surrounding Jane Doe. With each incision, they peel back layers of mystery, only to unearth something far more sinister than they ever imagined. And let's not forget the atmospheric setting of this film. Set against a backdrop of a stormy night, the tension is palpable, keeping you on the edge of your seat from start to finish. The Autopsy of Jane Doe is a masterclass in psychological horror, blending mystery, suspense, and just the right amount of gore to get under your skin. So, if you're in the mood for a spine-tingling journey into the unknown, look no further than The Autopsy of Jane Doe. But fair warning, once you enter this twisted world, there's no turning back. Just like the Bermuda Triangle.
True. That movie fucked me up.
That movie was... it was really, like, mind-altering.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't expecting any of the movie.
Yeah. It was very, it was a new experience.
It was dark, and then it kept getting darker.
Yeah.
Like, it starts with, obviously, an autopsy. Like, you know, like, we're gonna be, what I thought it was gonna be, like, it was gonna be, like, a crime thriller, maybe, like, I don't know. Kind of like Lovely Bones-esque.
Right, right, right.
Like, I thought that's what they we were going to do. They solved the murder of...
Yeah.
But no. And that's all you're going to get from me.
Just no.
Yeah, so good movie.
Definitely something that you should watch alone, by yourself, in the dark.
On a stormy night.
Yeah.
Has to be a stormy night.
Maybe do some... I was gonna say do some drugs.
We don't
say that.
We don't endorse drugs on this show. But if you have a baggie of, yeah, I don't know. This movie is not for the weak.
No, it's a good one though.
Yeah. So watch it.
Watch it, and you know what? If you watch any of these creep pics, let us know in the comments or, you know, on our socials. If you watched it for the first time and if you liked it or what you think about it if you've already seen it.
Yeah. Or, I mean, if you're watching an episode and the name of a movie that you haven't heard of in a really long time comes up. Tell us that you rediscovered the movie because we told you to.
Yeah, like watching it from 2014 in your bed or like driving or something like that one song.
I was literally just about to say this because, okay, so let's digress for a second because, was it yesterday? I think so. Yesterday, I came across... A comment on a YouTube video that I commented on in 2021, and it was because I was completely randomly thinking about a song that I haven't heard of in years. So I looked it up on YouTube to listen to it again, and then the song at this point in time, like right now in 2024, came out 14 years ago. So in 2021, was wanting to listen to it. And then I commented something of the sorts of like, can't believe it's 2021. I'm listening to the song, blah, blah, blah. Yesterday, somebody comments on it in 2024 saying that she randomly thought of the song too and started to listen to it and then commented on my comment, replied to my comment, which prompted me to go look at the comment and then listen to the song again. And that was insane.
Yeah.
That was ridiculously, like, one of the most out-of-body experience I've had in a while.
What a weird, like, connection.
Yeah.
You know?
So if that happens to you because of our creep picks, please let us know because I had a wonderful experience with that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. Love, full circle moments.
Yeah. Let us know what you think. Because she puts a lot of work into those creep picks.
I do. I do love my creep picks. I do love my sections of the episodes. Because I do a lot of...
Yeah, I got the easy job. I do the easy stuff.
You have the bulk of it, but I have, like, multiple things.
Yeah.
So... On to my other multiple things. We are on the Cryptid of the Week.
Am I changing it this week?
You might. I think a lot of people might. So, this week's Cryptid of the Week, we are diving into the murky waters of Australian mythology to shed light on one of its most enigmatic inhabitants, the Bunyip.
Bunyip. I like this.
The Bunyip, also known as the Kian Prati, is a creature steeped in Aboriginal lore. The word Bunyip itself originates from the Wemba Wemba language and translates to devil or evil spirit. This paints a vivid picture of the fear and mystery surrounding this elusive creature. The generally accepted view of this being is that it's a miserable, smelly creature that lurks in the deep, murky waters, swamps, billabongs, and waterholes, waiting to strike fear into the hearts of all its unsuspecting prey. But what exactly does it look like? Well, that's where things get truly bizarre. What makes the Bunyip truly terrifying is that it has various descriptions, from a long neck, crocodile head, and manatee-like body, to a dog-like face, horse-like tail, and even walrus-like tusk. The Bunyip's appearance is as diverse as the tail surrounding it. And not to mention its appetite for human flesh, particularly women and children. Oh no, cannot forget that. Legend has it that the Bunyip emits roaring noises before pouncing on its unsuspecting prey, dragging them into the depths below. The origins of the Bunyip date back centuries, with one legend recounting the tale of a man named Bunyip who defied the rainbow serpent and was cursed to become an evil spirit preying on tribesmen and their livestock. In the murky depths of history, whispers of the Bunyip begin to surface as early as 1818. Explorers James Meehan and Hamilton Hume stumble upon massive bones nestled in the depths of Lake Bathurst, New South Wales. Now, they didn't dub this creature as the Bunyip just yet, but they couldn't shake the resemblance to a manatee or a hippopotamus. Fast forward to the mid-1830s, and more clues emerge as fossilized bones are unearthed by George Rankin and Thomas Mitchell in the eerie confines of Wellington Caves, New South Wales. But it wasn't until the brilliant British anatomist Sir Richard Owen stepped in that these fossils were identified as the ancient marsupials Diprotodon and Notherium.
Ancient marsupial.
Then, in the scorching summer of 1845, the Geelong Advertiser spills the beans, painting a vivid picture of the Bunyip for the masses. It's a detailed account that sends shivers down the spine and marks the first official mention of the term Bunyip in history. But the real kicker, in January 1847, an unexpected discovery sent shockwaves through the community. An unusual skull, unlike anything seen before, washes up on the banks of the Mamaragi River near Balranald, New South Wales. The Bunyip's legacy is one shrouded in mystery and terror, captivating the imaginations of all who dare to venture in its realm. If you ever find yourself wandering the waterways of southeastern Australia, keep your eyes peeled and your wits about you. You never know what ancient secrets the Bunyip may be hiding underneath the surface.
I like this thing.
Did you look at a picture?
No. But I don't think that I'm going to change it.
You don't think you're going to change it?
No.
What's your pet right now?
The Wayo.
I thought you changed it
to... Oh, no. What was the... Oh, the Lone Pine Mountain yeah. Devil. Old Piney.
I mean, hide your kids, hide your wife, because this Bunyip be eating them. This is the picture that I saw of it.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck is this thing?
Oh, I like that one.
What the fuck is this thing? What the fuck? What the fuck? Oh, look at this stupid one. I like this thing. I think I'm still going to keep Old Piney.
Old Piney. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do like this one. This one's a number two for sure.
Number two pet?
Yeah.
So I originally had another idea for the cryptid of the week. Mm-hmm. However, came across the Bunyip. Or not
the Bunyip.
However, I came across the Bunyip. And as soon as I saw the Bunyip, I knew that we needed to talk about the bunyip.
I like this thing. I like it a lot.
And also, because last week I was talking about how I need to stray from the North American folklore and I need to start going elsewhere. And it was going to be another North American folklore, another cryptid. It was actually a cryptid in Indiana. I might go back to them. We don't know yet, but...
Yeah. And we just finished a show that was from Australia, too.
Oh, my God. This is going to be one of my favorite shows for, like, ever. It is, I mean, it is still kind of on brand, but also cast me because it is a murder mystery game show where there are faithful who are the traitor hunters, and then there are the traitors who get to kill a faithful each night, and then during the day, they get to play these challenges and win money for this enormous pot that they can either share as the faithful or the traitors, traitor or traitors, depending on how many there are at the end of the game, can take for themselves. So basically, you need to get the traitors out as a faithful or as the traitors. You need to kill off all the faithfuls and make sure they banish themselves so that you get to take the money home. Incredible show. It is such a good show, and I really want to be a part of it. So, like I said, cast. This is my audition video right now. So, hi. Hi, Alan. How you doing? I would be good on the show. Anyways, let's get to our This Day in History. And it's a lot more lighthearted than our last few This Day in Histories have been. But today, we cast our gaze back to March 25th, 421 AD. A pivotal moment in the history of one of the most enchanting cities in the world, Venice. Although no surviving historical records provide a detailed account of its founding, legend has it that at the stroke of noon on Friday, March 25th, authorities from Padua laid the foundation stones of this illustrious city. But here's where it gets interesting. It wasn't until around 450 AD that large numbers of people made the decision to settle permanently in the lagoon, transforming Venice from a mere trading post to a bustling hub of activity and culture. Imagine the scene, a network of islands connected by the intricate canals rising from the shimmering waters of the Adriatic Sea. Venice quickly became a beacon of trade, attracting merchants and travelers from far and wide, eager to partake in its flourishing economy and vibrant cultural scene. But Venice's rise to prominence was not without its challenges. Over the centuries, it weathered invasions, conflicts, and the ebb and flow of political power. Yet, through it all, the spirit of Venice endured, standing as a testament to human resilience and ingenuity. So, as we commemorate the founding of Venice on this day, let us marvel at the enduring legacy of this extraordinary city, a timeless symbol of beauty and innovation. Yeah. Super short This Day in History, but hi, Venice.
That's pretty neat. A lot of things come from Venice.
Yeah. And also, furthest This Day in History that I've done.
Yeah.
421 AD. How do we even have records?
Records of that. I don't know. I mean, you said that there isn't really.
There's not a lot of actual historical records of most of the beginnings of it, but I guess somebody wrote on a tablet stroke at noon. Yeah.
What's up, guys? Stroke at noon.
Literally, like, it's noon stroke. Also, let's make a fucking city, y'all. But yeah, I guess, like, did they have clocks back then?
I'm sure they had clocks.
I'm sure they had ways to tell time. I'm sure they had ways to tell time, but I don't think they had clocks. So, like, somebody was looking at, like, the sun and was like, noon.
Noon.
Let's make a city. Let's make this city.
Put that stone down.
So, yeah.
What's she doing with that stone?
Happy birthday, Venice.
It's 1:30 in the morning. We're delusional. I think that's going to be it for us for this week. Thanks for hanging out. Yeah. If you want to hear your story on Got Creeps, send it over to yougotcreeps@gmail.com or Got Creeps on Instagram and X. If you want to get in contact with me, you can find me over at John_Raimundo on Instagram and X or Facebook as just my name.
You can find me at Leilani May Raimundo on Instagram and Leilani Gilberte on Facebook. And I was just looking at the description of the Bunyip again. Please, on our socials, tell me which one of the descriptions you love most, because there are a lot of them. So get connected with us on our socials. Keep up to date with everything about the show. And thank you again for listening to the 9th episode of Got Creeps. Don't forget to like the video, like the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share with your friends so that we can reach more people who love the weird, mysterious, and creepy. We'll be back next week with your weekly dose of the creeps.
Bye-bye.